and my name is Gabriela, and this is Wicks and Candles, a podcast about two sisters and their obsession with period films.
We want to dig into our favorite films and review them, find out why we love them, how they shaped us, what effect do they have on us.
Join us on a trip through palaces and manors, balls and tea parties, and a lot of dresses, carriages, and of course, wigs and candles.
In this episode, Farewell, My Queen, or Des Adieux à la Reine. So, Gabi, we're back in France.
Yes. And at the beginning of the French Revolution, sorry for that, so quite an exciting time.
This is extremely exciting for me. Okay, should we start with some facts about the movie?
Sure, I'd love to. So this is Farewell, My Queen. It's a French drama film from 2012. It was directed by Benoît Jacquot, and it's based on a novel. The novel was written by Chantal Thomas, and she won an award for that book in 2002. So it was an adapted script, a screenplay. It stars Diane Kruger as the queen, as Marie Antoinette, Léa Seydoux as the main character, and Virginie Ledoyenne. The film was quite well received back then when it came out. It opened the 62nd Berlin International Film Festival in 2012 and was many other festivals and so on. It won a few prizes. It won a few awards. For example, the César for the best camera, best costume, and best scenery. And a funny fact about the film that I found out while I was doing research in preparation for the podcast, the film was really made in Versailles. They could only film on Mondays when the castle was closed. So they had a very short frame to shoot the scenes inside the castle. So yeah, Nene. That was a very quick overview of the main facts about the film. How about the plot? Do you want to tell us something about that?
Yeah, thank you so much for those movie facts, Gabi. That's great. So I can tell you a little bit about the plot. It's July 1789. It's the eve of the French Revolution. And the court at Versailles is living their life as usual. They are relatively unconcerned by what's happening in Paris. And the movie opens on July 14th. So the viewer knows where we are in terms of time frame. And what we see is just the corps going around doing their normal lives. And the film follows one character, is the character of Sidonie Laborde, who is the reader for Marie Antoinette. The queen, she's sort of like the secretary of the library of the queen, and her job is to read to the queen. When the news about the storming of the Bastille finally reaches Versailles, most aristocrats and servants leave the palace and essentially abandon the royal family, knowing or fearing what was coming. But Sidonie really believed in the queen, and she refuses to flee. By the end of the film, we see that her destiny is actually going to be a little bit different, because the queen orders Sidonie to disguise herself as Gabrielle de Polignac, la Duchesse de Polignac, who was the queen's favorite at the moment, and to serve as bait so that La Duchesse de Polignac can safely flee to Switzerland. So that's the plot.
Very good, Nene. It is really a fascinating perspective on history. And I have to say, I didn't know about this film until we discussed it for our podcast. You recommended it to me to watch it. And my first impression was that I was kind of surprised to see Diane Kruger playing the character of the Queen, because I had a very biased image of Diane Kruger as an actress, you know, playing, I don't know, action figures and, I don't know, other female roles. And I didn't really see her in the role of Marietta. Impression of. Okay, so this is French Revolution, a snapshot of the French Revolution, and Diane Kruger is playing in it. A little bit discordant. So,
yeah,
what's your impression? Let's take a look at it first. How was your impression of Diane Kruger playing Marie Antoinette?
Well, I can tell you my first impressions overall. I really loved this film when I watched it, and I had the great pleasure and luck to see it in the theater with our brother, Jose Tomas. He loves history, and I invited him to watch it because I saw the trailer and said, we absolutely have to go see it. So I saw this movie in the theater, in an art house. It was great. And my impression of Diane Kruger playing Marie Antoinette wasn't that shocking at all. I mean, I knew her from Inglourious Basterds. But not from too many other films. And I think we need to mention a little bit of the context here. You live in Germany, and Diane Kruger is a German actress. And I have the feeling that she's known in Germany as a different type of actress, whereas in North America, she's known as a, you know, versatile actress, essentially an European actress who would not be out of place in a period film. So I didn't have any preconceptions or any other ideas of, you know, what she should be playing. Where for you, it seems like you had like a very specific kind of a type of character that you have seen her play.
Totally. Yeah. For me, Diane Kruger is too Hollywood. It's too Hollywood. And for me, I had to get used, along the film, I had to get used to her face as Marie Antoinette.
Wow, very interesting. Well, so Gabby, now we will talk about the performance a little bit later on, about, you know, seeing Diane Kruger playing Marie Antoinette, such an iconic character. But what about Léa Seydoux? She plays this fictional character, Sédonie Labarde.
Yeah, well, that was also, know her. After researching a little bit more, I realized that she's actually a very renowned and respected actress in the French film scene. So, shame on me, I didn't know about her. But, well, she is a very beautiful woman. Yeah, she is a very beautiful woman. She irradiates a lot of energy on the screen. She has a very intense look. So I think she was more fitting for the role she plays. As you mentioned before, she plays a servant who reads, whose main job is to read. And so her face was a little bit more down to earth, like, yeah, down to earth. It was maybe also too pretty to be a servant. Yeah. And this is maybe with the entire film, you know, that the women that are playing a role in the entire story are too
perfect.
Yeah. And this is maybe also why I had my difficulties to accept Diane Kruger as Marie Antoinette. So symmetric, so perfect for both, for the Queen and for Sidonie was really about.
Wow. That's very interesting. Yeah. So you were in a way distracted by the beauty of the actresses, rather than being able to focus on the performance and get lost. What you say, yeah. That's what happened.
Well, of course, and Diane Kruger says this herself in an interview that I saw. It is really difficult to play a historical figure that you know some things about. Yeah, not to be, you know, to have certain patterns or cliches in your mind before you play such a role. So of course, it's kind of difficult to differentiate. Okay, what do I know on the surface about what I've read on books, and how do I imagine this woman to have been? Yeah. So I can imagine that she struggled with that.
It must be hard.
Yeah. But to give, it was difficult for me to see the depths in the character of Marie Antoinette, because it was the frames are so such close ups. Yeah, that it's really like you are meant as a viewer. You are meant to really admire these faces.
Yeah?
Give me more. I was all the time kind of expecting, okay, give me more. I need to feel more what she's really going through in this moment, you know? And I didn't really get that vibe that she was really scared.
Yeah.
It was a little bit superficial.
All right. No, that's very interesting. I think we're gonna have some. I think we're gonna have some fireworks as this discussion moves forward.
Give me your impression. Give me your impression.
Well, we were talking about. Yeah, we're talking about Léa Seydoni, so Léa Seydoux as Seydoni, and we move up. We kind of move back to Diane Kruger as my. Of course, these are two very beautiful women, and in fact, well known both in Hollywood. Diane Kruger more well known than Léa in Hollywood, but also, you know, in the European film industry, they are well known actresses, industries in their own countries. But for me, it was not hard at all. I do have some issues with the director, which we're going to touch on later on. But the casting was not an issue for me. I did believe both of those faces in those roles. And if we focus on Seydoni Laborde, who's, she's the reader of the queen, and she's essentially a servant. She lives in the servant quarters in the palace. Everybody has a right to beauty. it doesn't matter where you come from, but there's almost no denying how intense her, her look and her style is, in a way. She's a very intense actress, and she says a lot with her face. It is undeniable. She's really beautiful. But for me, there's many other aspects to her performance that made me just be completely submerged in who this character is and the period that she's living in and her situation. I didn't have any issue in believing her performance just because she was quite beautiful. In fact, I think that would have fit, because it's well known that Marie Antoinette chose her, the favorites, were chosen for their beauty, their freshness, their youth, and so on. So if Seydoni was to become, to be allowed to be around Marie Antoinette's circle, I guess she had to be present quite beautifully.
Well, of course, the role of Seydoni is the main character. It is the plot driver of the film. So, of course, you get much more, as a viewer, you can get much more of what she's really going through and how she's feeling, and maybe how you can imagine it a little bit better. But of course, you're seeing development of the story through her eyes. So, of course, it is giving you a much closer look of the entire story. But yeah, with Diane Kruger, I don't know, I had my issues.
So Gabby, now that we have talked about Diane Kruger and Léa Seydoux and the roles they play, essentially, the casting of the two main characters, can we talk a little bit about the plot? It is based on a novel, an award-winning novel, the Prix Femina. So what do you think about it?
I think this is the thing that makes the film so special, and that it is telling a tiny slice of the story of the French Revolution, completely different perspective as how we know it from history books, you know? Because, you know, as a history reader, you know, you what happened this day, or the king and the queen and who did what, whatever. But to see it or to imagine how we must inside the palace of Versailles during those days is a completely new perspective for us as an audience. And that's really what makes it so fascinating, the entire film.
Oh, Gabi, I agree. 100% agree. This is what makes this movie so interesting to watch. I have now seen it a few times, and I really love the fact, like you said, it's showing a very small part and a very different perspective from the history books, because it's focusing on 3-4 days right after the French Revolution. So right from, you know, July 14 to about July 18 or something like that. And essentially we are seeing how everything is happening just in the immediate aftermath of the fall of the Bastille. So this is really interesting. And another thing that's very interesting is that the plot stays with Sedonie, who is a servant girl, so she's from the, you know, the lower class, but inside the palace where all the courtiers, the, you know, the nobility who lives at Versailles with the hopes of seeing the king one day or another, once in a while. So the plot stays very close to what's happening there. We do not go outside, save for a couple scenes. So it is truly fascinating because we're seeing the nobility reacting to the news, sort of like in real time, quote unquote, and we've seen kind of like how everything is happening, the fear spreading through the news, spreading with the servants, the nobles. And I think this is truly interesting to me because it's just essentially saying, what would happen? It's like saying, I would like to see what happened right after the Bastille fell. It's like, yes, exactly. The feel, yeah, puts you right there looking at the very intimate moments of, you know, what happened just after the Bastille fell. And you're right close to the kind of the action there.
Absolutely. Like backstage, you want to
backstage.
See.
Backstage.
From the first row. This is really fascinating. And also because it... many of the scenes, because it is driven by Sidonie, many of the scenes are also showing rooms and spaces inside the palace that you don't see many in many films. And if you go to Versailles, to the palace itself, you don't see them either, because you are only shown the real rooms. So to kind of see the back rooms inside the palace is, of course, super fascinating. And this is a thing that we love and that we love about period films, when you really feel taken back to time and back into those spaces. And this is really special in this film, that you really feel that you are in and you are seeing something that maybe you have never seen before.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we're moving from plot to a little bit about, you know, the settings and the production a little bit, because so the plot is quite simple. The Bastille falls and we see what happens in the next 3-4 days inside Versailles. So it's quite simple, and it's just telling a very intimate story of Sedonie and what happens to her, as a servant to the queen. She's basically at the whims of the queen, and this is essentially what happens. She's trying to remain loyal to her, and that's it. So that's the plot. But if we move now to the kind of the setting and the production and the costumes, this is, I think, the big win of this movie. This is the triumph of this movie for me, because like you said, one of the most important things, or one of the main things that we love about period films, is that they make you feel to the past. I think that's when you feel transported in time and space, and when a movie manages to do that, is priceless.
It's priceless. Yeah. It's the
biggest pleasure. And this movie, again, it is for me what it manages to do the most in terms of the setting. Like you said, they film at Versailles, so they have the real location. You also mentioned that we see the servant quarters, the kitchen. We see a little bit of the queen's rooms. We do not see the king's rooms. We only see the queen's rooms, a couple of spaces where she moves in. But essentially, we see the servant's room, the courtyards, mainly the, you know, the kind of, like you said, the backstage. They, you know, the upstairs, downstairs, we're seeing the downstairs, essentially. And everything, you know, the sense, you know, this is July in Paris. And from the first scene, she wakes up and she scratches her arm because she has like a mosquito bite. You can feel the humidity. It's hot. She gets dressed. She tries to comb her hair so she's presentable before she goes to the queen. She's running. She's sweating. You can see, you can feel the heaviness of wearing this clothing in the summertime. And, you know, you have to be well-dressed to be in the palace, obviously. And you can see Sedoni kind of struggling to keep her composure. The first morning when she's called to attend to the queen, she goes to another girl's room and she asks to borrow some cologne, and she gets some violet like scent cologne and to refresh herself. So you really have a sense of how hot it might have been. It is the middle of summer, of some of this scene. There's music in the movie. There is music, but it comes in and out very discreetly at certain times. But there's entire scenes that have no music. Like there's a scene where she's coming back from visiting the queen, and she's kind of like in the hear the trees, the wind going through the trees, and you see the courtier walking along the gardens. And the sense is like you're there. It really transports you to a time. There's no noise. There's no traffic noise. There's no modern noise. I really love about this about this movie. No question about it.
Yeah, yeah. I agree that really the production was really good. And what I liked is something that it really stuck on me was Sidonie wearing the same dress through the entire 4 days.
Yes.
And this is a very subtle but really clear sign. She only had one dress, you know. And she tries to keep it as tidy as she can. But this is it. She's a servant, so she cannot. Yeah, she didn't have a huge wardrobe. Yeah.
That is such a good point.
It was such a nice hint to say, okay, she only had one dress. She wears that through the entire film. That was really nice.
That is a very good point, because clothing, you know, before the 20th century, in fact, clothing were some of the most expensive items that anybody could have. Clothing was expensive and hard to make. So somebody like Sedonie would not have had the money, even though she would not have had money to have several dresses. So she's, yeah, like I said, she's trying to keep it tidy. She's always kind of fixing herself so she's presentable, combing her hair quickly before she comes into to see the queen. And yeah, there's one part when there's one scene when they say, oh, you're, you know, the underskirts, oh, they're filthy. And she covers, you know, she's wearing the one dress. And it must be sweaty. She spent the 4 days in the same dress.
The same dress.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's a very important point.
And also this, how they also show it, this contrast of what you mentioned before, upstairs, downstairs. You see this so nicely when she is downstairs getting dressed or eating with the other maids or with the other, yeah, with the other servants and so on. It's all so minimalist. Her room is really nearly empty. It's so austere. Yeah, it's just a chair, a table, her bed, and there's nothing else. And then she walks up to the rooms of the queen, and it's, you know, all this glamour, all these lights, chandeliers, windows, and this contrast is so nice to see. But you can, yeah, you really feel, get this feeling so strong that you're in a,
yes,
in a parallel world.
Oh my God. Yes, in parallel world, right there. Right there, you're in a parallel world. And that, what you just said, is so relevant to the discussion of this movie, because obviously Versailles itself was a parallel world.
Was a parallel world.
To the totally. Rest of the French mm-hmm. people. To Paris, but imagine, parallel world to Paris, but imagine for the rest of the French, even mm-hmm. more so. Wow, what an observation. Totally. The settings, the rooms of the servants are absolutely bare. She has one valuable item. She has like a couple of valuable items. She has a clock somebody has lent her. It's like a gold clock somebody lent her so that she could be on time to see the queen. So, and people ask her, like, this is one valuable item. And then all the other servants come to see it and they look at it and they ask her, can I borrow it? Because this is the one thing that it has value among their possessions. Very interesting.
Yeah. 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 And well, it's in Versailles, so it looks all pretty. Well, the yeah. rooms that they show the yeah. queen and so on. It's really
oh,
pretty.
Yes.
And,
can I add about the queen's room? Once we go to the queen's room, it's spectacular. We have the flower arrangements, the bed. She's looking at fabric samples and fashion magazines. I mean, this is just so much pleasure to somebody who loves the 18th century. This is just a feast for the eyes and just for curiosity, because you see all these items sort of like as the queen would have used it. And these are some of the things that you can still see today in some museum, which is the queen's book of fabrics samples, which she would choose for her dresses, essentially. Wardrobe. So you see all these things. Once we are with the queen, we see all of these little details in her room. And it's truly fascinating.
And also kind of intimate. What you're describing, there's a scene where Sidonie comes to read her, one of the first scenes where she comes to the queen to read her. And the queen is lying in a nightgown, kind of on a morning gown. So not made up, not with her makeup, not with her wig and all her fancy dresses, but she's lying in this nightgown on the bed. And it's a very intimate imagination of how it must have been to be the queen in the morning, you know? And such details make it so interesting and so fascinating.
Yeah, because it is essentially sort of like, it's asking the question, what if you could be a fly on the wall?
Yeah.
When this was happening, essentially the whole plot, the whole movie, and I guess the novel is asking the question and trying to answer what would it be to be a fly on the wall and see
exactly.
all of these intimate scenes happen, like how did the queen react, how the king react, how did the courtier react, how did the servants react, what were they talking about, what were the what was the procedures that were in place to deal with the situation, and very intimate moments. Like, she's the queen, we see the queen with no shoes, barefoot.
Yes,
we see the queen barefoot, and essentially we are seeing all of this through Sidonie's eyes. She's essentially the fly on the wall. She's playing this role. We are seeing everything with her big eyes, because she's like, I'm in this intimate position, I'm in this privilege position
to get so close to such an untouchable, unreachable person. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very good, Nene. Maybe now that we have really touched some of the elements that we were mostly impressed about, maybe we can already mention some of our favorite scenes of the film.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want to start? Or do you want me to start?
Sure, I can have a go. I will certainly say a few words about the entire film because all in all, I liked it from the views, but I have my issues with the entire film. So I will try to focus now with the favorite films, scenes, really on the things that left a mark on me. The scene where Sidonie is reading to the queen is one of the first scenes, and she is scratching her arm. I found it so interesting, first because of this intimacy, and also because it was also one of these elements that they want to give you to show you she is, you know, she has an own pure skin. For me, it was not a mosquito bite. I took it like as if it was fleas, you know? Uh-huh. And she wanted to hide these fleas bites, you know?
Wow.
That's how I took it.
No, so, very good.
And I thought to myself, well, this is also a nice contrast because the queen is showing us a, you know, this porcelain, white porcelain beauty, all soft and pretty and whatever and perfect. And Sidonie has these scratches on her arm. So I found it, I would have never thought about such things back then, yeah? So that left a mark on me. And there's a scene where the queen is already aware of what is really happening. The news have gone already so far that there's this list of all the royals who were supposed to go to the guillotine. And for whatever reason, Sidonie is called to see the queen. It is dark because this is happening in the evening. So she enters the room and the queen is sitting by the fireplace. And the beauty, I like the beauty of the scene because it's a dark moment, it's a dark scene. And you only see, you focus your view on the queen sitting on the chair by the fireplace and all the light of the fire is falling onto the queen who's dressed up all like also in a golden gown. And she's wearing as much jewelry as possible because she wants to smuggle it, I guess. So this was for me like a very beautiful scene. The things that is happening behind it, I have my issues with this scene as well.
Yeah.
Because it's all very, I don't know, it's all very unclear what Sidonie's job is actually meant to be in that moment. So, I don't know. I really didn't get the entire thing. And well, but as I said, the beauty of the queen sitting by the fireplace, I think this is, this was something that, for the viewers, it's a nice thing to look at.
Wow. Yeah. The movie setting production, it is truly beautiful. Well done. I mean, again, we don't know the accuracy of the costumes. I think they're quite accurate, but overall, the film, the sense of time, the sense of place and time, it is, I think, perfectly achieved. And I think that's why that scene left such a big impression on me as well. There's a whole, this whole scene, this, like what you're saying, this whole, what's happening is that the queen is in a panic because, you know, she's thinking that, the king and queen are trying to decide what they should do. The queen has said it on her mom to escape, bring the kids. So essentially she's giving orders to all her, her ladies, companion ladies, right? Madame de Campan, Madame Bertin, Sidonie. She's kind of giving them orders in the middle of the night. Do this, bring me this hat, bring me these jewels, let's take this. And she gives a few contradicting orders to Sidonie. And one of them is, she has kind of confessed her very deep friendship with Duchesse de Polignac. So one of the orders that she gives her in that scene is, she first asks her, can you bring me some maps so we can map out, the best escape route. But then she says, you know, she forgets about that. And she says, can you go and, you know, actually Sedoni offers to go and wake up Duchesse de Polignac because the queen wants to see her and somebody tried to wake her up. Successful. So Sedoni says, I'll go wake her up. So it's a very confusing scene. And it's it's meant to be because Sedoni is confused. She was called. By the queen. She say, okay, the queen wants you now in the middle of the night, and she has to go and figure it out. And she said, okay, whatever she asks me, I will do it. So Sedoni is completely perplexed. Like, what do you want me to do? First, she asked me for some maps. Now she's asking me to go get La Duchesse de Polignac. So I think it's meant to be confusing, but
Well, now that you mention it, now it makes a little bit more sense. So maybe I can interpret it like the director didn't manage to give me that impression as a viewer that it was supposed to be like this. now that you portray it like this, of course it kind of makes sense because she was confused herself. Yeah, she was in such a panic that she really didn't know what to do first or what was right or what was wrong. Yeah, but still, as I said, it the point was missing for me. The point that didn't really make this point clear, that it was about the confusion of the situation and the confusion of king, queen, and courtiers. What do we do now? Yeah, and this is something that I am pretty sure it can be done. They can.
Yeah,
a film production can really convey this message in a better way.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, this could be the first firework.
Before you go to the fireworks, is there another scene that you liked best?
Oh, well, yeah. So let's talk about my favorite scenes. I have lots of favorite scenes, but I have a couple of favorite scenes. My very, very most favorite scenes, you kind of mentioned it a little bit. So it happens at night. It's like the second night. So July 15, when the July 14, you know, it's like nothing happened. July 15, they wake up with the news. And, you know, it's like slowly, the news kind of penetrate the walls of the palace. So by nighttime, it is kind of like settling in. And essentially, Sedoni goes to the servant quarters to go back to her room. And the hallway where all these rooms are is packed with people. At night, it's dark. Packed with people, the nobles, you know, the courtiers, the ladies and the men, all walking the hallways talking and in fear, and they're just discussing the news, and it's all lit by candlelight because it's nighttime and everybody's walking around, and she's like, there's this sense of fear and confusion, the news, like, what do we believe? This is what they're saying, there's dress. You know, some are wearing their pajamas, some are wearing their still day clothes, some they just put their wigs on really quickly to leave the room. So there's this scene, I love it for many reasons. One of the reasons is there's a lot of wigs and candles in this scene, like literally a bunch of wigs and a bunch of candles, and it's beautiful. But the main reason I love this scene is because there's a moment when one of these nobles comes in with this pamphlet that says, these are the 286, and, you know, people gather around him and said, what is this? What is this? You know, it's a piece of news in a piece of paper. And he says, this is the list of the 286 heads that need to be cut off for the government to work in the future. And of course, there's a panic that spreads immediately after he says that. And he says the first, the second is the queen, and the third is Duchesse de Polignac, the favorite. And sort of like number four is Madame de Lamballe, the previous favorite of the queen. And then he says number 26 is my head. So this moment where the nobility of France is learning about their destiny, and we know what happens. As viewers, we are so privileged that we're watching this and we know what happened. We know the terror happened. We know that thousands of heads were cut off. We know that the blood really flew, like, you know, at Place de la Concorde. We know the guillotine. I mean, we know what happened. We know that most of these people walking these hallways are going to lose their heads. Yes. And, you know, the gravity of the situation, they're starting to understand it. For me, this is absolutely, like, this is what I want to see. I want to feel history. And this scene makes me feel it, like, in my bones. I feel the fear of these people knowing what's coming. Absolutely brilliant for me.
Very good. It's a good one. It's a really good one. And as one of these ones that give you this perspective that you don't know from the outside, yeah, just walking yes. through the servants' rooms. It's a fascinating scene. It's a really good one, yeah.
Another one, and I'm going to limit myself to two because I have many other favorite scenes. Another one is there's this great character that Sidonie is friends with, and he's an older gentleman. I think it's Monsieur Moreau. He is kind of like the note taker in the palace. I don't know what the... I really didn't research what the official role was. It's actually kind of like not the historian, but somebody who's taking notes of everything that's happening, sort of keeping the diaries and keeping everything, all the events. So she's friends with Monsieur Moreau. This is played by the actor Michel Robin. So he's an older gentleman. And there's a moment when she goes to his rooms and he brings him a dinner. And she says, please tell me what's happening. And essentially, she says, sit down, and he sits in his bed, and he has a wonderful room full of papers and books, wonderful setting, like beautiful design. And he essentially tells her, okay, yesterday, at this time, the people took La Bastille, they cut off the head of the officer guarding the Bastille. The Swiss army, the Swiss guard, several of them are dead. The Swiss guard was guarding the Bastille. Several of them were killed. And this is what's happening. Essentially, you feel, and this is something that we know so well. We have 300 years of knowing, you know, what happened. You do feel that you're hearing this for the first time. Like, you do feel this is how people heard. This is how people heard the news, you know, in this. Like, I can't quote the dialogue exactly, but it's really well done in the way that he tells her the events, and she's being more and more horrified by the news. But this is how people must have heard, not only in Versailles, but in Paris, and any other city across France. This is what they're hearing. They took the Bastille, they killed the officer guarding the Bastille, they killed the Swiss army officers, and there's, you know, this bloodshed, and they're going for, you know, the government, you know, is falling. Monarchy is falling. So, I got shivers. This is another scene where I felt history, and I absolutely love that scene between those two characters. And that actor that plays Monsieur Moreau, ooh, what a treasure. Beautiful.
What a treasure. Yes. He was really interesting. Yeah. He was really strong. Monsieur Moreau.
Yeah. And I'm going to leave it at that because I have many others in this movie.
Very well.
So, Gabby, so, I know there's a scene. I know that we have, you know, why don't we talk a little bit about the issues that we have around this movie? Because we do, you know, we had a discussion before where we talk a little bit about the issues that we had, sort of like as a final critique, and you know, yes. then we can go into our rating of how many weeks and candles.
And do a wrap up. Well, there is one element of the film that really causes a lot of discussion, and we talked about this before, and that is that the director himself, he decided to make Marie Antoinette for the film, a lesbian, let's say like that, which is absolutely fine. So he focused a lot on this topic. You know, he trying to portray the relationship, love relationship of Marie Antoinette with her favorite, Polignac, Gabriel de Polignac. And also as if Sidonie was also kind of in love with the queen. You have mentioned before that Sidonie was really always so keen to be pretty for the queen and to please her because she was in absolute awe of the queen. And she would admire and absolutely adore the queen. So he tries also to kind of give also to that relationship also a love and sexual touch, you know, to the entire thing. So he tries to make out of these three women like a love triangle kind of thing. And, you know, everything is fine. It, for me, it would have been fine if Marie Antoinette was a lesbian. I mean, it's a total normal thing. But for me, it was kind of made up by a man, as if he actually wanted to please some kind of fantasy of his own and to put this so strong into the entire film. There is one scene that you mentioned that in this confusing scene with all this chaos, the queen asks Sidonie to get Gabriel de Polignac, and she goes to Gabriel's room, and this woman is lying on the bed and she's sleeping and she's completely naked. She's completely naked. For whatever reason, why would a duchess, of course you said it was hot and whatever, but still in those days, nobody slept naked. But of course, in the film, she goes into the room, the woman is naked, and for whatever reason, Sidonie lifts the blanket that was covering Gabriel de Polignac. And you see from above, the scene is shot from above, from the ceiling, you see this woman completely naked lying on the bed. I think this scene doesn't add anything to the story, or to the plot, or to the film. How about your opinion to that?
Wow, I agree very much with that assessment that you just made of some of the choices the director made. If we focus on this particular scene, we have what is the name of the actress?
Virginie Leroyan.
Yes, another wonderful, beautiful actress. And
another pretty face. You know,
another
pretty
face. Perfect
pretty face.
But, it, you know, the thing is, these three, well, Sidonie is a fictional character, but both the queen and Polignac are supposed to have been really pretty, especially Polignac. She was famous for her beauty and freshness and so on. So the casting, you know, how beautiful they are, I guess they have to find the beautiful women. But these are three well-known actresses. So anyway, she has a minor role. Virginie. She has a smaller role. She's not in as much. And focused on her performance, I could say that it's not my favorite how she chose to portray this character, because she was supposed to have been very sweet, and she doesn't portray her as very sweet or kind. But anyway. Yeah, this particular scene where she goes to get her, it is absolutely unnecessary. I do not see the need for this. I mean, let's be really clear right here. The queen, she could have been lesbian, and that's perfectly normal. That would have been fine. But this were based all in rumors. Number two, I have nothing against nudity in film. I love it.
We'll
it's wonderful.
Love nudity in films.
Yeah, nudity in films is great, but it has to add something. Here, it truly feels like add on, like just to fulfill some titillating, just to create some titillation that is truly unnecessary. I mean, supposedly, Sidonie, in her love for the queen, supposedly we are meant to understand that she's jealous or curious of why Polignac will be the queen's favorite. So I guess that's kind of the justification. Sidonie is curious of what does that woman to have to be the queen's favorite, because she's in that intimate position, but not quite. I mean, she's just the reader, she's not the friend. So yeah, beautiful scene. Wonderfully lit with candlelight. Obviously, Virginie Le Doyen, it's gorgeous, but completely unnecessary.
And, completely necessary.
Yeah, and the triangle, yeah, there's a lot of emphasis in that triangle, in the intimacy, you know. And I think this will be something, this will be a question to us, the historians and the experts in these kinds of things. Because, you know, friendship, female friendship, it was a little bit different from what we understand today. There was a lot of, you know, war, like it could be quite intense. Female friendship could be quite intense in terms of how they will address each other and tell them, each other that they love each other and their favorites. And but it doesn't mean that they were lesbians. These were all, you know, essentially the anti-monarchy, I guess, press and the people, right? The revolutionaries, they really detested the queen. And obviously they detested Polignac as her favorite. And they use that relationship to kind of point out to people, you know, how depraved the queen was, and, you know, to hate her to
demonize her a little bit. Of course,
exactly.
Because back then it was a scandal, you know. So they wanted to kind of make her look bad, you know, by saying, okay, and she's even relationship with someone else. It doesn't shock us today, but you know, he took that rumor, the director took that rumor and made it look like how from a too masculine perspective on such a love relationship.
I agree.
It didn't really add much to the entire plot. And there is even another nudity scene that I also felt it was completely unnecessary. It's pretty much at the end where the queen asks Sidonie to dress up as Gabrielle de Polignac so that they would flee the country together. And if something happens, then it would actually be as if she was Duchesse de Polignac to save her favorite. And so Sidonie is standing there and she's getting this message, okay, you're going to dress up as Madame de Polignac. And they ask her to undress in front of the queen. And I think this is also something that in that moment was completely unnecessary, to see her undressing. And I don't know, maybe he had another thing in mind, what he wanted to portray with that scene. But I thought also to myself, you know what? I don't know.
Yeah.
A little bit out of context.
Well, no. But I think the point he's making is that the queen is looking at her. Essentially, the queen is looking at this another female body. So again, we're supposed to believe that the queen same sex desire. In fact, it's not even suggested. She says it in a piece of dialogue where she says, "Have you ever been attracted to somebody from the same sex?" Where you cannot even, you know, keep, you know, that you are going to explode of emotions. The queen asked that question to Sidonie. So basically it's textual. The thing is, we didn't read the book, so I don't know how much emphasis there is in the book about this kind of suggestion of same-sex attraction and love between Polignac and the queen. So I'm not sure how much the author emphasize this, but in the movie it's quite textual. It's quite like right there, this is part of the story, it's a love triangle, and for me it doesn't add anything. I mean, it's supposed to add motivation for the queen for wanting to save Polignac, and she's devastated that she has to send her away, but
you know, even if he could have done it in a more subtle way. He could have made it, okay, let's pretend, let's imagine Marie Antoinette was, she was in love with women. She liked women. But he could have done it in a more delicate way.
Yeah.
I think it was for him, it was kind of like focusing too much on that. Yeah. And that makes it kind of to a point where you say, okay, this is a little bit overrated, it's a little tending too cheap, to be cheap in my eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will, you know, later on, hopefully in other episodes, we can discuss most about, you know, who's directing period films and who are they made for. I think probably the data probably shows that most peer films are watched by women. I'm not sure. I'm making this up. But and this movie is directed by a man. And yeah, you can kind of see it all over in this triangle that he so wants to emphasize. So that will be the one thing that I don't appreciate about the movie. There's also one sex scene that is not sexy at all between Sedoni and another kind of servant.
Paolo.
Paolo, the Italian, but he's not really Italian. He's just an actor. And he's like, no point. Absolutely no point.
Absolutely no point. Completely out of context. So he wanted to kind of add these sexual elements into the film, but he didn't really make it believable or authentic, or really, he didn't really, place it properly inside the plot. And if I mention now the plot, I have to say that this is the second thing that I have my issues with the film, that there are so many things unclear or that make no sense throughout the film. And I wish I could have read the book, or I would have read the book. Maybe I still have the chance to read it, because as we said, the from the point of view of where the story is being told, it is super fascinating. And I'm pretty sure the book has much more content and much inside views to the entire thing that the film is portraying. And the film is not making it justice, most likely, because there are so many contrary things and so many scenes that are not making really sense. We see throughout the film Sidonie being so smart. She reads, which was already unusual for women, and also for kind of poor women to read, to have books and so on. So you say, okay, she must be a very intelligent woman. You see that she's kind of determined. She's not really dumb. She's really determined, and she knows that she has a certain privilege, but she's kind of also aware of what is happening outside, and she's not falling into panic. She's very eager to get the news. This is what she gets to Monsieur Moreau and talks to him about the entire thing. So you have the sense, okay, Sidonie is kind of a smart girl. And at the end of the film, she makes really dumb stuff, you know?
Yeah.
If I may say so. And then you say, okay, where did she get the motivation to be dumb now? You know, what happened to her? She was supposed to be smart. So there are many contradictions throughout the film. And also, as you said, many scenes that really don't add anything to the story.
Fail. Yeah, the character of Sidonie is interesting because I think the way it's played by Léa Seydoux is something interesting. Léa Seydoux has a very childlike face because she has these full lips and very big eyes, and you know, she has like this round, really, I don't know what the word is, like childlike face, and at times she seems to act a little bit like a child that is just witnessing things that she doesn't understand. Like, she's cool, even though she's supposed to be smart, like you say, even though she's supposed to, you know, she's a reader, but Léa Seydoux, she's not the intellectual type. She's not the cerebral type of actress.
No.
She's very sensual. Yeah. And she has, again, for me, I don't know what other word, childlike wonder. Like, she's confused. Yeah, so it is true. She does some questionable things at the end that you really think, you know, where did all the smarts go? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if we start to wrap it up in our final critique, how many wicks and candles would you give this movie, and why?
Okay, I'm going to be tough on this one. I'm going to give it a six wicks and candles. You know what? It was beautiful to the eye. You know, it was fascinating from the point of view that the story is being told. As we mentioned before, the perspective is kind of new to the viewer. If you are interested in this entire French Revolution topic and so on, so you're seeing this piece of history from a very interesting perspective. The production was very well done. as we said, this contrast between upstairs, downstairs, I really, really enjoyed. So as I said, it was kind of a feast for the eye and it was beautiful, but I have so many issues. As I said, with Diane Kruger as the queen, I didn't really, you know, felt the vibe from her. I have my issues with the love triangle. I said, I think it was too man-made for my taste. And also with some contradictions throughout the story. So all in all, I think it's a very beautiful film for the eye, but it's not a film that really hit me, that it left an impression on me that I would say, okay, I will remember this film for many years to come.
Wow, okay. Well, revolutionaries, and they weren't the monarchists. And I'm going to be the monarchist in this case, because I'm going to give this movie, oh my God. I'm going to give this movie, oh God. I was going to give 10 Wicks and Candles to this movie. But, oh my Lord, it's the heart. I'm going to give it nine Wicks and Candles. And this is why. I am obsessed with the 18th century. I still don't know why. I don't know why. And this movie placed me right smack in the middle of the 18th century, the most important year of the 18th century, I guess, in history, which is the French Revolution, or only that, on July 14th. I felt the heat, the sweat. I felt the fear. I felt the weight of history heavily on me. And for me, this is the pleasure that period films give me, like transport me, like I feel how it would have felt then. This is my fascination. I want to be in history. I want to be there. I want to be that fly on the wall. And this movie absolutely made me feel a fly on the wall. I saw the queen panicking. I saw the king being all noble and good. I saw the servants going wild. I saw people, you know, the courtiers in panic, escaping the, you know, losing their wigs, essentially. So for that reason, I appreciate that very much. I mean, this is what I seek in period films, and this movie gave it to me. And perhaps also I saw it in, I was so impacted by it. Like it left a deep impression on me. The 1 week and candle I took away is because, yeah, that love triangle that feels unnecessary, and the emphasis, you know, is, yeah, it feels very coming from a very male perspective, like titillation for titillation's sake and for men. Like, yeah, the scenes are beautiful. And I feel you could have conveyed the love of the queen for Polignac, mm-hmm, as a deep friendship.
In another way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, without having to insinuate that they were lesbian lovers, or lovers, period. They were lovers. And the thing is, these were rumors. This was something that the revolutionary queen and Polignac. So you're kind of making these rumors come true and not really exploring what was really happening there. So for that reason, and that reason only, I take that. But for the rest, for everything else, the sense of place, the sense of time, the sense of history, for the costumes, for the, in fact, I do love the performances, and I do love Léa Seydoux in this movie a lot. Even though she, as the character, makes some questionable choices at the end. Yeah. I really, this is for me one of the top ones, and I'm gonna go back to watch many other times, because I do enjoy it a lot.
Very well, Nene. I think this is why it's interesting that we see the films not together, and that we find out during our recordings what really went through our minds.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, that's the thing. And, you know, when I think of period films, when we think of period films, we often think of, you know, early 18th century Jane Austen adaptation, or a Bronte sister adaptation, or something like that. And this movie is taking me to a period that I'm quite interested in, which is kind of like the beginning of the modern era in a way, which is the 18th century, the French Revolution, all of those things. These are I'm very interested in, and for that reason, I really love this movie, and I highly recommend it, and for everybody to watch if you love period movies, and yeah, this is one to watch. And okay, so overall, we gave it like what, 15.
It goes with 15.
It goes with 15 Wigs and Candles, so it's still a worthy one to watch.
Well, we will never really pick a film to talk about that we really hate. So,
well, you, it could happen. Oh my God! And by the way, I did like Diane Kruger's performance. Well, she's supposed to be flighty like this, I think, anyway.
You know, I bought the Marie Antoinette from, who was it, Kirsten Dunst, in Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette.
Really?
I got that much, much more. I kind of had the sense to comprehend Marie Antoinette better with her performance and with Diane Kruger.
Wow, I think this is shaping up to be another episode where we compare these two Marie Antoinette. I think this should be one on the list to discuss. Marie Antoinette in the Sofia Coppola's movies and this Marie Antoinette. And maybe we can find another one. That would be very interesting, as a discussion. Anyway, Gabby, that's the episode. Thank you so much for this conversation, Gabby. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you, Nini.
Yeah, and for you listening, thank you so much for listening. We hope you had fun, and stay tuned for the next episode. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wigs and Candles is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
So go ahead and subscribe. And follow us on Instagram at Wigs and Candles. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.
Wigs and Candles is written, hosted, and produced by Andreina Romero and Gabriela Morgan Romero. The image design is by Pamela Rollin. The podcast theme music is the Concerto for Two Violins in D Minor by Johann Sebastian Bach.